if the opportunity came, I'm like, yeah, I'm taking a chunk out of it. I want a piece of that blade.
This is the last chance I'm going to get at designing a Hypershock for a toy, so it had to be perfect.
They knew that they couldn't really go weapon to weapon, so they went weapon to side of weapon.
We hit the jackpot in Vegas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Outside of the Box. I'm really excited to get back to talking about BattleBots. Of course, I love all of combat robotics, but I feel like it has been a little while since we've had something fresh and new to talk about related to BattleBots. However, coming off of my Proving Grounds episode, there is a lot to be excited about right now, including a robot you may have heard of called Orbitron. I have a couple of folks here from Hacksmith Industries to talk about it. So Ben and Bogdan, please introduce yourselves.
So my name is Bogdan, and I'm the Director of Advanced Projects here at Hacksmith Industries. I do a lot of the design reviews and help out with some of the technical design and some of the team organization on Orbitron.
I'm Ben. I'm a mechatronics engineering designer at Hacksmith. I kind of do everything on Team Orbitron, everything from helping organize logistics to helping build the robot to I'll do some machining, some program. I don't know. I do everything.
Well, that's very exciting. I'm a little bit curious, though, you know, for those that aren't familiar with either of you, because, you know, I've checked into, you know, some of what you've done, but kind of tell everybody, you know, my audience a little bit about your backgrounds and how you came to be involved with Orbitron in the first place.
So both Bogdan and I work for the YouTube channel Hacksmith Industries. And about, it's almost a year ago at this point, a team from the University of Waterloo, it's one of our local universities, approached us with an idea. They wanted to build a BattleBot and they wanted our help to sponsor their team. Originally, they were just looking for a bit of funding and maybe a bit of outreach from us. But both Bogdan and I have done various levels of competitive robotics, all in FIRST Robotics. So we have some experience with competitive robotics, and we said, hey, we can do you one better than just a bit of money. So we brought Team Orbitron into Hacksmith, let them use our facilities, gave them access to our machines, our equipment, our sponsors, and the whole power of Hacksmith Industries to make a competitive BattleBot, the first AI BattleBot.
Yeah, and we wanted to do BattleBots for the longest time. As Ben mentioned, we've done a lot of FIRST competitions, both on his side and my side. I've done a lot of skilled trades competitions as well. So I'm very familiar with competitive robotics, and so is he. And we've been talking about doing a BattleBot for the longest time. But as you know yourself, it's a huge commitment, both in terms of time, in terms of finances, in terms of equipment that would be used up and taken away from our typical day jobs, which is making YouTube videos about taking fictional ideas from comic books, video games, and movies and building real working prototypes. So typically we're building giant mechs, we're building lightsabers, we're building working hoverboards. So this is right up our alley, right? We do a lot of destruction. We do a lot of really cool and unique technologies and share that process on YouTube through our channel. And this is right up our alley. And when the team approached us, we basically said like, yes, this is something we've all really wanted to do. And having, a full team that is dedicated to it, that has a wide variety of skills, was the perfect fit for us to be able to partner with them and create a, highly competitive robot.
I couldn't agree more. I'm sure as you both know, there's a history in BattleBots of folks who, kind of do similar things to what you do with Mythbusters and, those folks having previously been involved with BattleBots as well. It's all about coming up with these, these concepts and these ideas and making them into reality. And there's no better way from a creative standpoint to do that than in BattleBots. So it's really exciting that you're doing this. Now, my question is, maybe the question is why AI, but it also might be why not AI?
I guess there's a couple of different reasons. First of all, it's something that we feel like has been underutilized in BattleBots, right? Like not necessarily, GPTs and stuff like that, but using machine vision and, computer automated driving. It's not something we've really seen to the extent that we're trying to do in BattleBots. And obviously right now that's a huge hot word. It's a huge topic that everybody is really trying to get on board with and trying to implement into a lot of different technologies. So that's also really good for expanding the field of BattleBots and expanding, you know, the technical challenges of BattleBots, but also really good for marketing and outreach and getting people who are, you know, wanting to learn more about AI, wanting to figure out what can it be used for, how is it beneficial, to then also be like, oh, it's using competitive robotics. What's competitive robotics? What's, you know, competitive combat robots? And then also getting them to not only to get interested in technology and AI, but then leading them down this path of, whoa, people use, you know, these build these crazy machines to fight each other. Like, this is super cool. And there's AI involved. I want to get to know more about this. So it's really good for marketing and outreach and, you know, popularizing the sport. But a big thing is just both me and Ben are in mechatronics, and we love the integration of software, mechanical, electrical, and, you know, in hardware. And I think adding that extra layer of complexity of the AI, adding the extra software, the custom control circuitry, really brings the complexity of the robot up and makes the entire problem a lot more interesting, the entire like robotics implementation a lot more interesting, but also does have a lot of benefits in terms of competitiveness that I can let Ben talk a little bit more about as well.
Yeah, I think, so in FIRST Robotics, in FRC and FTC, so I compete in FRC, and then our other team members, Stephen, Peter, and Adam, they all compete in FTC. And in both FRC and FTC, at the beginning of a match, there is a autonomous period where the robot has to be fully autonomous to complete a set of tasks. And then throughout the match, higher performing teams will use that autonomy that they wrote to help aid their performance throughout the remaining part of the match that is driven manually. And I think Stephen and Peter saw that this is technology that they have experience with. They know how to write autonomy for robots that both makes the robot fully autonomous and helps the driver drive the robot during a more manual portion of the game. And they've said, hey, that can be applied to BattleBots. This is technology that's being underutilized. You can do things like add traction control, stability control, auto pointing at another robot in a defensive mode. You can add all these technologies to BattleBots that it's never seen before, because in most situations, BattleBots are just overgrown RC cars. You throw a computer on it and you can do a lot more. You can improve the performance by just doing a little bit more. And then once you have that control, making it fully driven is something that is doable. It's a lot more work, but once you have the infrastructure in place, it's totally doable.
And there is a lot of benefits in addition to the ones that Ben mentioned, in terms of reaction time as well, right? BattleBots is a very fast-paced sport. There's a lot happening in those 3 minutes. And so being able to react to changing conditions, right? Not only where you are on the field, but where your opponent is on the field, where their weapon is facing, where your weapon is facing, and you know how fast your weapon is spinning up, right? And being able to make those critical, like, you know, millisecond decisions, being able to decide, hey, am I going to go attack or am I going to, you know, defend? And is it best for me just to back up or is it best for me to turn? You know, driving around the field, driving around the hazards, that's stuff that needs to be, you know, you need to be able to respond to and make the right decision really quickly. Which humans are good at making the right decision, but they're not always the fastest at it. So at the moment, the way that Orbitron works is combining, you know, the benefits of, okay, the human knows what's best, right? The robot might not necessarily know, oh, if something's damaged, what to do with, you know, how to drive best if part of your armor's damaged. But the human then use the benefits of fast response time to drive the robot more precisely and more accurately than a human would be able to in those split-second decisions.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, a lot of the points that you make, because I think that a lot of people certainly have concerns about AI or wonder like how effective it could be or whether it replaces the human element entirely. But I would argue that blending the AI capabilities with the human capabilities is actually the best way to do it. And I think that you seem to be doing that in a very, you know, solid way. So I'm excited to see how that continues to work. Obviously, you've had, you know, when I had Trey on the show talking about Orbitron, and it, you didn't have as much success the first time out, and then were able to make those improvements and come back and do much better. So kind of talk about that process of iterating on this idea.
With our robot, because of all the added electrical and software complexity, the most important thing for us is testing time. We just need to be able to put the robot in the box and just drive it around. Engage the AI, turn on the features, turn off features, make sure that we can fall back properly. And we have a pretty good facility for testing here, but we obviously don't have a battle box. We can't spin up the weapons and drive it around. We can drive it around, but we don't have the steel floor and we don't have as big of a space. So just being able to go to the battle box and drive our robot in that environment is invaluable. We have just so many little things that need to be tested and that need to work. And we can do a lot of that in the simulator. So when we get there, we know we're at a base level, but it's not a real robot. And we just need that time in the box. And that's the one thing that we find is when we're there, we're in the box as much as we can. We get there, we put the robot together, we go in the box as soon as possible. Like there's, for us, there's no data to be gained unless we're in the box. And there's really no reason to be there. So even after our final fight, when we were there last time, we went back in the box because we were there. We wanted to play with settings. We wanted to tune it. We wanted to make sure that we're gaining the most that we can out of our time in the box.
As Ben mentioned, like our robot has a lot of additional complexity that other teams might not have, right? We have full custom circuit boards. We have our robot is actually running CAN bus for communication between all the controllers and all the receivers, which I don't know many other teams that do that. And there's a, you know, we have our own receivers. We're not using standard off-the-shelf radio remotes. So we have our own transmitters, our own receivers. And behind all that is a lot of custom code, right? The robot's running custom code. Our VESCs have custom tuning on them for our brushless motor controllers. Our computer is running many, many layers of custom code from user interfaces to, you know, simulation to real-time calculation to machine vision. And so all of those things, they need to be working you know, together really well, and we need to get a lot of those bugs sorted out for us to be competitive, in addition to all the mechanical and electrical issues that we have just like other teams as well.
For sure. Now, I am really curious because, I mean, one of the reasons why I love combat robotics so much is that progress and that evolution that we've seen over time. I mean, when you look back at the days when the show was on Comedy Central and what those robots looked like and how they performed, and then the robots today, this is kind of like that extra step forward. But I'm curious if it's just been on your radar in general, a lot of the really unique things that some folks out there have been doing more on the lower level circuit. I mean, I know that I mentioned when I was, you know, contacting you, you know, the Project Liftoff guys at NHRL, I mean, they have, you know, experimented with some of that stuff. We have Pearl Gray, who is a team member of Bloodsport that uses a Steam Deck as a transmitter for the robot. I mean, like all of these things, you know, has that been on your radar in terms of paying attention to the way that folks have innovated with the way that we do combat robots today?
It's hard because there's a lot out there. It's hard to stay in contact with people. I know Bloodsport, their team does a lot with telemetry and the Steam Deck driving for their for the small robot. We actually were investigating Steam Deck driving for our robot at around the same time. I think we've partnered with ASUS recently, and we're going to probably be using an ROG Ally for that going forward. We might not see it during the fight, but for kind of testing, driving around where we are, it's a whole lot nicer than having to dig out the computer with the multiple monitors and a power station and all that. It's just having something you can pick up and go. That's big. And yeah, we've talked to teams here and there, but just the timeline we've been working under, it's kind of been very much, we streamline our development and then go from there. So I'd love to get in contact more with teams. Just this past weekend, I was at an FRC competition with Orbitron and got in contact with the local Ontario Bot Brawl League for their smaller combat robots. So it's going to be awesome to get more involved with that for sure. And, yeah, I would like to be more involved with.
And we are also looking into making a smaller version of Orbitron to be able to get more in the box testing without having to go to the battle box for every single thing we tune and we change.
I'm also curious because it's very common that I tend to ask teams, you know, about potential matchups and things like that. But I mean, have you thought at all about the, you know, BattleBots and the live show and looking at some of the established robots, if there's like, there's this robot that I would love to see what Orbitron does against them just because of your design versus their design and how that matchup might look.
I think a big one that we know we are very strong in is mobility and speed. And that's one of the things we're really trying to push for is a powerful drivetrain, lots of traction, where you're using magnets on the bottom of our robot to try to get as much traction as we can, be able to get our best acceleration. And that's really a huge point of the AI, right? Is to be able to make those split second decisions, really drive precisely and drive really quickly. And so our robot design is based around that AI portion. And that's why we have those counter rotating spinners, right? In terms of having redundant weapons, those are great, but we know we're not the most powerful bot in the arena. What that does allow us to do, however, is turn on a dime with no gyroscopic precession. So we're able to basically go full speed, almost 20 kilometers an hour, and do, you know, a pinpoint turn and go straight for another robot without having to worry about gyroing or lifting our wheels or, you know, flipping ourselves over. So that's one of the huge benefits. So I think, you know, going up against teams that have a lot of that gyro effect, we're going to really see our benefits. So going up against someone like Minotaur other robots that have large single spinners, right? Being able to use that ability to change directions really quickly, to turn really quickly, and, you know, try to get to their sides, try to get behind them while they're limited by their turn rate because of gyro forces. I think that's really going to be our big, big step and our big matchups that are going to help us progress. Teams that we're scared of, obviously, our first fight against a horizontal spinner didn't go super great. We do have new armor configurations that are still yet to be tested against horizontal spinners, and hopefully that will help our survivability there. But we're definitely scared of those large weapons, hard-hitting weapons, because having two motors for two spinners and having all that extra weight invested in the spinners takes up a lot of our weight from our armor. So we're definitely not the heaviest armored robot either. And that's going to, you know, definitely put us at a disadvantage against those harder-hitting bots with those large spinners, that large amount of reach, where we have to be really, really precise of where we approach them and where we hit them.
Yeah, I have to say, I would love to see Orbitron versus Minotaur. As anybody who's watched the show for any length of time knows that Minotaur is my favorite robot. My first combat robot was heavily inspired by Minotaur, so I would love to see it. What's the, you know, the plan from here as far as iterating? I mean, I know we still don't have any kind of definitive date on BattleBots as to when that might happen. Obviously there's still going to be a Destructathon proving grounds, you know, that you can take it to. So what is kind of that plan look like?
We have some changes that we're going to make from the last one. Nothing major. We're not doing a full robot redesign as we did from the first to the second. We got some improvements, and then just more testing, tuning. We would like to get back. If we knew what was happening this upcoming weekend, we might've just left the robot there. All the fights they're having. We didn't find out about that until a little too late. We had already shipped the robots back. So it would've been awesome to just leave the bots there and be there for this weekend. But We don't have anything set in stone yet either, but we're making changes and we're going to need to test those changes.
Yeah, a lot of those changes right now are the serviceability improvements. I don't know if you've seen our video or not on the last iteration. We did end up pinching a wire that caused a lot more damage than it should have. And it was just a indicator light wire. It wasn't even like a main wire, but having it be that was pretty frustrating and definitely caused a lot of damage and took a lot of our testing time out of the day, which was not great. So we're making improvements to reduce the chances of that happening again and improve how easy it is to do things like change batteries, how easy it is to, you know, swap parts out inside the robot, as well as just reducing some weight around the robot in some key areas in order to give us more room for things like magnets, things like armor, and various different configurations, whether it's, the horizontal configuration or configuration against a horizontal robot, or, you know, the vertical configurations to protect our top of the robot as well for like hammer saws and stuff.
For sure. You've got to make sure that Orbitron is prepared for defending champion Sawblaze if that matchup should take place. So...
Absolutely. knowing that our similar style of robot that's competed before, and I think a lot of fans want to see was Counter Revolution against Tombstone. So for the very first while, a little bit, we're definitely compared a lot to Counter Revolution, and I think that that's a matchup that we're kind of aiming or expecting to see potentially, just because of that history there. Roundhouse again, because there's obviously that rivalry going on now. We're obviously really close, and we talk to each other quite a bit about our robots. But having them beat us out in the first one, and now us coming back and winning our second fight, that's definitely another fight that I think we'd want to do in the future. So we're definitely getting prepared for those horizontal spinners, because that is, as proven previously, one of our weak points.
Yeah. That's good though. You learn and then you try and prepare better for the next time. Now the last thing that I wanted to touch on, because obviously it's such a thing that's like near and dear to me, is just this, doing this from a community growth and outreach perspective, because I have to say it's pretty incredible that this group came to you and said we want to do this robot, and you've become so involved in making this happen and making it the best that it could be. I think the more that we can grow and like get involved and help each other, the better. So I just kind of want to hear more about that as like a way to grow the sport and help out a team that had a really great idea, and you've been able to turn it into something that I think is going to be pretty spectacular.
The why behind Hacksmith Industries, right? Like the reason Hacksmith Industries even exists is because we want to inspire other students and other people into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We want to show them how cool engineering can be, how exciting and fun solving these technical challenges can be, and how much of a positive change it can make in the world. So that's why we make our videos. The way we usually do that is by taking fictional ideas from comics, video games, and movies, and bringing them to real life, building real prototypes. But this fits perfectly into that why as well, right? We're showing people like, yeah, you can use these same technical skills, the same engineering background, the same problem-solving mindset to build some really cool pieces of tech and really push your own limits, push the limits of other teams, and develop really cool technologies that, in this case, it's for show and it's for entertainment and enjoyment. But a lot of these technologies and all these developments are at some point being taken away by other teams, by other engineers who are, learning how to do things like, shock mounting and vibration mounting and battle hardening components, to then go into things like electric vehicles, to go into things like, improved software for, things like autonomous driving or whatever. And these takeaways that are starting out as, entertainment and enjoyment and excitement, really inspiring people to create better technology for everyday life as well. And I think that fits like perfectly with our vision, and as well as just the vision of BattleBots in general. And we've definitely been trying to, get to know a lot more other teams, get to network throughout, the scene of BattleBots or combat robotics, and learn about how other people do things, what other people do, and how that can be expanded into the everyday life.
I couldn't have said it better. That's really great. I'm sure I'm sure all of my audience knows, like, follow the Hacksmith, subscribe, what they're doing. You guys are doing pretty incredible things, and I'm excited to see a channel with so much reach bringing something like BattleBots to people who may never have experienced it or heard of it, and growing that interest in STEM that I think is so important. So I thank you. I appreciate you coming on to talk about Orbitron.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. No worries.
Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. And for those who are watching, please like and subscribe to this channel as well, especially if you are new to my content, as we have so many amazing interviews with BattleBots competitors and others in STEM, and we'll continue to bring more of that to the table in 2024. Thank you again, and we will see everyone next time on the show.